Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Climate Careers Podcast from Voice Academy, where we take you from climate passion to climate skills. Join us on Tuesdays to hear a new professional in the climate space share the insights you need to land your next climate role. I'm Anita Kelava, co-founder and head of marketing at Voice Academy, and this week we're hearing from Nagashree. Right now, she's a green entrepreneur working on social impact and workforce transition. And before that, she was at Tesla for 5 years as a senior ops leader in many different roles. She'll talk us through her climate journey and how several pivots got her to where she is today. It's a fascinating conversation filled with some great practical advice on how she's succeeded, as well as insights on how to find the why, the what, and the how of your climate career. I'll let Nagashree take it from here.
So I would say the common thread throughout my career has been my passion for environmental sustainability. And it all began with my bachelor's in architecture in India from NIT Calicut. I learned my engineering mindset there, as well as the passion for environment. So the program is very focused on building science, as well as technical aspects of building industry. After my undergrad in bachelor's in architecture, I pursued a master's in urban architecture at University of Southern California here in the United States. That brought me here. My focus at school was still, you know, sustainability. So it was urban architecture. It was focused on transit-oriented development, urban heat islands, and daylight design. So that was my initial, you know, introduction. And then a whole decade of in architecture, designing and building ground up, commercial as well as residential high rise, retail and interiors, commercial interiors. The one common thread, and back then, you know, LEED was a big thing. I think LEED is still a common, you know, ground for building industry. But that's where I got my introduction to a more formalized way of introducing environmental sustainability into design. And, you know, having worked, I did a ton of LEED Gold buildings, net zero energy buildings. And I wanted to push the envelope further. And I felt like that should be the norm in the building industry. And the pivotal factor for getting into the business environment was learning the language to sell to the financial decision makers. So I pursued an MBA, a part-time MBA with UC Davis. And while I was there, I was awarded the EDF Climate Core Fellowship. It's like an 8-week program where they embed you in a company. So I worked at Gap for 8 weeks, giving them a solution on how to reduce their, energy bills and get their retail fleet more energy efficient. So that kind of opened up my eyes to thinking that corporates make a huge impact. So I saw at Gap through their product as well as through their initiatives, how they impacted the world. And from there, it was no turning back. I'm based out of Bay Area. So Tesla was my number one clean tech company to apply for. The first role was a solar roof, new market entry analyst position. And it was perfect for me because my background in architecture understood, you know, built environment, as well as my business knowledge, because we were going to take solar roof international. So understanding the global, you know, environment and the built environment and how to, you know, pitch this from a business perspective. I would say my stint at Tesla has been 360 degrees. I've kind of done a self-rotation myself. So I did a few different roles there. And within Tesla, it's been very easy to navigate if you're passionate about, you know, getting a whole rounded experience. So I did a supply chain automation role. If you guys want to know, Tesla is a very tech company. All the internal and external platforms are built within. So any transactions. So I worked on the supply chain automation platform and I worked in the capacity of a product manager. And soon after that, I also took on the supply chain manager role for Solar Roof. And that was an eye-opener for me. That was a real business role in terms of, you know, working with bringing the manufacturing of Solar Roof from China to United States. So reducing the carbon footprint there, reducing the cost, building partnerships with steel and roofing manufacturers to, you know, build these parts anew here in United States. And what I would say from this, the biggest learning experience was that the effort for reducing costs, you know, finally led to the, you know, reduction in carbon footprint of that product. So I feel like it could be either ways. Like, it's not always that you have to have, a carbon footprint reduction in mind. There are so many different ways of addressing, issues. From there on, I was invited to join the Solar Roof growth team because they were planning to, you know, increase sales and distribution of Solar Roof. So I joined the team as an analyst and then as a business development associate, helping, you know, expand Solar Roof across the United States. And then finally, my last stint at Tesla was in the operations capacity. So helping, you know, the order to delivery process and helping the B2B partner experience in this space. And that, I would say, kind of helped me feel completely like well-rounded to be in the business environment. And I feel, you know, that can, you know, help me be successful in any other environment I go in.
Oh, wonderful. So you've had like a very diverse experience in Tesla, and that's beautiful that you could have that. My question would be, how was the beginning of your experience in Tesla? Like, what was the process in interviewing? I know that we have a lot of people that are looking to get into companies like Tesla. So what were some tips that you could give about entering those spaces and entering companies like that?
So I would say, you know, from my experience, because I pivoted, I regard the pivot as an entry point. So entering into the business world was brand new for me. I would say, and I've learned a lot in my experience doing this pivot, is I got an opportunity to kind of understand and look introspect into understanding my why, my how, and what. So I would encourage the folks who are listening to this is, you know, truly dive deep into why you want to be in this field, and how you want to do it, and what is it that you want to do. And I'll describe further. So when I looked at my, you know, understanding why I wanted to do, I was, you know, deeply passionate about environmental sustainability. And it came from a place of, you know, empathy for the planet and for the people. So understanding the impact of humans on the planet was pretty, you know, it was disturbing for me at first, but I was hopeful. When I saw examples of how people were mitigating, I was hopeful and I wanted to join that, you know, that force that was helping do it. So that was my why. So I ask you guys to deep dive into doing your why. I'll get to the piece on the more, you know, the technical pieces or the skills. But I think more philosophically and a high level, if you can describe your why, what is it that you want to do? Like, for me, I think it was very clear that I want to make impact through business, because I understanding concepts like value proposition, ROI, those were critical. So for me, I thought, should I be an advocate for environmental sustainability? Should I work on a product that's making the difference? And I came to a conclusion that I want to be in the business environment for products that were delivering the change. So that was my what. And then how to do about it, there's endless ways of going, but I would say a structured approach on applying to companies, understanding which companies inspire you in their journey, you know, how they are pushing it, how they are accelerating it, was important. So I made a list of my companies that I want to be with. I actually first went and talked to people within the company, even before applying, understanding what are the different roles, what are the skill sets needed, I investigated that landscape before I dove deep in. And then in making these relationships, I kind of got some, you know, entry points. And then I said, what are the skill sets needed in order to be successful in some? And I would say, when you begin at first, cast a wide net, as wide as you can, and apply to as many as possible. Make your options open, understand what the environment is, and then apply. And then, I can go. I think if Anita has questions more specifically on, you know, what are the skill sets, I'm happy to answer. But up to you, Anita.
Yeah. I think that that's what people would love to hear. Just like, could you, just summarize what were the sort of key things that you recognized that were really important to the employer when you interviewed?
Yeah. So I think, like, from the onset, the confidence, and I know it doesn't come right off the bat, but for me, like for Tesla specifically, or any of the companies I wanted to apply the top 10, I wanted to understand what the companies are looking like. What is their product? Because, you know, eventually what you understand is like, what is the profit-making device for them? That's important. If you were able to contribute to that, that's what they're interested in. So understanding the company, their background, their products, what they're passionate about, and then, you know, marrying your passion with that. And then secondly, you know, your communication skills and your willingness to push yourself to the next. Coming out eager is always what an employer is looking for. Not over eager, meaning, you know, like to the point of annoyance, but eager in like, hey, I am willing to forward the cause of your company and I'm willing to forward the cause of my career. Keeping both of those at the forefront. And then I would say definitely hard skills like data analysis. It's, in my experience, data analysis has been like the bedrock of every role that I did. Making sure you're sound in that, critical thinking, looking at numbers and seeing what they speak to you is very critical. Both dollars as well as volume is important. And, you know, doing scenario analysis is important, as well as this presentation skill of presenting yourself, as well as presenting these numbers and value proposition and ROI. I feel like those were like the top cream that you need to have. Definitely every specific role will have its requirement, but in order to be successful in most environments, according to me, those were the top skills needed.
Awesome. Okay. Great overview. I just have a question. When we spoke before, you mentioned that you work with Tesla on in social impact and in disaster assistance. What was your experience like that in that section? And then could you give us just an overview of working with Tesla? How has it shaped your view of clean tech playing into the net zero goals that we've set for us?
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah, so I will say, like, while my tenure at operations, I always looked at disaster relief and said, you know, I wish I could do it. And I think my prayers were answered. It landed on my, even without asking, it landed to me. And what I would say is, even though it was a small venture from Tesla, it was an eye-opener for me. Because whenever disaster strikes, Tesla has this amazing product. It's called a mobile power wall unit, which is like this two power walls with a gateway and a switch together, which is a standalone storage that paired with solar is a microgrid. So managing this fleet of these mobile units, as well as partnering with nonprofits, and whenever disaster strikes, when there's a hurricane or the Maui fires, for 2 years helping coordinate this effort, working with nonprofits to deploy them, making sure we're providing uninterrupted power, partnering with SpaceX on Starlink so that there is uninterrupted internet during disaster. This kind of opened up my entire perspective for social impact, and that, you know, I wanted to work more in the space where I was making a difference directly to, you know, to the grassroots level. I know there's a ton of talented people in the corporate world, and I feel safe exiting it. I feel like a lot of the, you know, heavy talent could, you know, help embed in some of these works, which need a lot of support. In terms of the second question, Anita, on net zero aspect, from my experience at Tesla, I'd like for, you know, just going to the basics of what net zero means, for the people, we should understand what are the most energy consuming sectors in the world. And you would see like it's industrial, it's residential, it's commercial, transportation, all of these. So the way Tesla, and I will speak from that experience, is the way Tesla envisioned it is creating this ecosystem of products which are addressing all of this. So from the off the bat, the ecosystem is solar storage and EV, which encompasses the entire residential single unit. And of course, they have industrial scale storage and stuff. But also, if I can bring your, and I don't know if a lot of people follow Tesla, but they unveiled their master plan last year, in which, and I want to give you the breadth how this would impact net zero, is they want to take the solar to about, you know, about a 30x of what the solar is currently installed. That means taking it to like 1 terawatt installation per year. So that's what they're dreaming big. Then this is by 2050. Then in terms of battery, they're 29xing, which is like 16 terawatt hours of storage. And I don't know how many of you, you know the real details of, you know, what energy storage and all those aspects are, but, you know, the vision is big. And for EVs, their vision is doing 85 million cars per year. So in order to achieve that transportation, as well as the energy backup for residential, commercial, as well as industrial sector, kind of they are dreaming big to scale their productions in order to get to that level. So I would say that is their vision for net zero. There's a ton of effort from all across the globe on kind of meeting the needs of net zero.
Awesome. Great answer. Okay, so I'm going to move us back a little bit. I know you mentioned that you worked with Gap and you consulted with them for a couple of weeks. And I would just love to hear more about that process, because that's a similar approach that we have within our climate skilling programs, that we have analysts analyze net zero plans or ESG plans, and they look at it and then they give their critical thinking. And so what was that sort of experience? How did you feel? What was the end product? Could you tell us more about the project? Yeah. Would love to hear.
Yeah, super excited. I was super passionate about the endeavor at Gap. So when I landed the EDF Climate Corps Fellowship, I was informed that, you know, I am going to help kind of provide a proposal for helping reduce their carbon footprint over the retail. So at the very first onset on joining this fellowship, I requested for, you know, all the energy bills across their retail fleet. So you understand Gap is all across United States, and they had all these different brands under them. They had Old Navy back then, Banana Republic, Athleta, and many more such brands under them. And so, and their retail fleet across United States. So looking at, so this is where I say the data analytics is very critical. And, you know, just kind of to rewind a little bit back, my experience as an architect, I knew what energy efficiency meant for a building environment. So understanding what are the key aspects, there's heating, ventilation, there's lighting, there's the building envelope. There's, of course, energy bills to analyze. And then talking with operations was critical for me. So I got this huge data of an energy bill across 10 years and what they were. I saw some patterns in, you know, what are some of the spikes? When are the spikes? Were they mitigated? Then I got a report on all the HVAC improvements, faulty, and if they were metering any of these things. So getting all this data, it was huge because there are like thousands of stores across. Getting that helped me understand like what were some of the critical aspects that were causing in the energy consumption, what were the bills. So understanding top upfront, what is the annual cost of energy that that Gap was expending, getting that. What is the total, you know, energy in terms of, you know, what hours that that was getting expended? And then understanding what is that delta that, you know, should have been. If you see a standard average footprint of a retail, what would be the consumption and what is that delta that was in excess? And then deep diving into specific, you know, case studies of, you know, XYZ retails, how they were. I visited some. Look at some facilities, how they are managed, how they are operationalized, you know, how many hours they leave everything on for all the time. So understanding every single detail of this upfront was very critical for me. And then talking with all the business leadership was important, not only for understanding, you know, what their vision was, but also for understanding what is critical for them in operations. And there were like all these different stakeholders in place. After I got this, I did a really hard thought process. And then someone else that I want to mention in this is RELA. There are very like parallel organizations for every, you know, field that you are. So RELA is the retail industry. They're an association. And then there's another coalition called Sustainable Apparel Coalition, which, you know, Gap is part of. So understanding what their goals are and how they approach kind of tying with them and then bringing that back and say, hey, let's take a smaller portion of Gap. So I proposed, my final proposition was for Athleta, 45 stores. This is what I propose. With these many XYZ dollars, phase one, phase two, phase three, these are the improvements you need to make across your retail fleet. This is the XYZ dollars in saving. This is the carbon footprint saving, and this is the energy savings that you would have. So having a clear goal in mind, how to present it, and having that end goal in mind helped me kind of formulate everything. And yeah, that was a great experience working with across Gap.
Beautiful. And did you get a chance to, I mean, it was a short period that you consulted, but did you get a glimpse into the implementation? Did you get any feedback?
Awesome. Super excited. And so I was, they have a huge, I was mind blown that their sustainability division is huge. So not only do they work on, you know, the sustainability of the products, meaning the apparel that they produce, there's the water footprint. So they have all of these ESG goals for Gap. They have also like labor laws and all those. So getting exposure to that, I would attend meetings for all of these just as a listener to absorb what is the impact of this entire ESG. And then they did have like a lot of smaller programs where like reducing the hangers at Old Navy, some of the products are folded, some are hung. And so how to reduce the, you know, hangers, the packaging. So I got to, you know, see a lot more beyond just energy efficiency. And then I'll just be frank, after I left there, there was not much interaction. But recently, I was super excited. I met another Gap, you know, sustainability leader, and she actually joined Tesla. And she told me, you know, Navisha, you'll be proud to know that Athleta is implementing your proposal. So I was like, I was super excited to know that, you know, they're implementing what I proposed. And prior to me also, there have been other EDF Climate Corps who've fellows who've proposed solar, and they've implemented all those because they kind of align with the goals of them reducing their carbon footprint. So yeah.
Amazing. And I know that you mentioned that was sort of a point where you felt confident in your pivot and you were sure of your next step and going to that environmental approach and career direction. So could you just like give us bits and pieces of your experience that really sort of uplifted your confidence so that people know what to go into and what to chase when it comes to experience?
Yeah, right off the bat, I'll face something that was eye-opener for me. So I would say, you know, the gap stint was amazing. But what I realized, and I said it before too, is that understanding what is the, you know, the main core value of the company. So at Gap, you know, their core value is the product is an apparel, right? So for them, that is the top line. So they will invest all their energy and their efforts on the top line. So the sustainability of the apparel, the product quality, and all of those aspects are more critical for them. And their focus, I would say 99% of their focus is on the product. And so energy efficiency is on the bottom line, where it's reducing the cost. So it's on the back end of things. And that usually doesn't get that much, you know, attention. I know it's part of the overall ESG, but ESG itself is like, it's further down the chain for any company. And so I would ask the listeners to think hard, where do you want to make most impact on the top line, or you want to make impact on the bottom line? I knew off the bat that, you know, I wanted to work on the top line. I wanted to bring more products to market that were sustainable and that made a difference. So for me, working on a product that was super impactful was important. And that helped me. And that's what I say is important for you to understand what is it that you want to do. If you want to, there are a ton of people who want to work in the more, you know, getting the climate awareness and that space. So for you, it would be more important to work on ESG, on, you know, advocacy and such. But for me, I knew I wanted very strongly to work on products and also grow myself, right? When I was going into that space of business, speaking the financial language, speaking the operational language, this has just well-rounded me. I feel people listen to me better because I know that language. So just another tip for you guys that if that's where you want to head to be a business leader, or be an individual contributor, you don't have to make that choice now. You're always, you know, you can pivot as many times as you want. But like, think hard where you want to go, where you want to grow. If you want to be VP somewhere, you want to be a CEO somewhere, think now about it and see how you can grow within there.
Beautiful. I mean, that was my next question. I know that you have to speak a ton of different business languages in order to get across some of those initiatives. And what were some, we've had speakers that were speaking about the ways that you have to address and talk to leadership in order to implement those and to get management on your side. So what were some of communication tips that you would have for communication and getting people on board with all of the initiatives that we have going on or that you would like to implement within a corporate situation?
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I would say the same thing, you know, thinking hard or wherever you are in whatever company you are, understanding the pain point of the company is very critical. What are some of the challenges they have? What are some things nobody's looking at? You know, because when you are bringing out product, there's so many moving pieces to that. That when you enter that company, you are doing your day-to-day job, but you should keep your eyes open on what other are the opportunities out there, how you can improve this. And, you know, take the ownership and leadership and come up and say, hey, you know, there is potential into improving this, and this is how you can do it. And in terms of getting leadership attention, I would say through your work definitely is the first way. When you work hard, you A, deliver what's given to you. Second, you ask for more. Always ask for more, I would say. I know that's kind of, you know, taking up and it's stressful, but I feel like we all have the ability to ask for more and to do more. And I can say this from my experience. I was in the building industry and what I did at Tesla, I could do, I would say, 100-fold more than what I did as an architect. And, you know, not only physically and, you know, be able to do that, also mentally do it. So A, from ask for more, ask to help, ask to support, how can I be of help? And then second, looking hard again, like I was saying, and what are the challenges? And then come up, say, hey, I can present to you, you know, some of these aspects of doing it. And this is how you would do it. So give it a, give a solutions based. Don't say, hey, this is just the problem. Come up with a solution and say, this is some of the ways potentially you can. In terms of getting leadership attention when you are in that position, I would say the best experience I've learned at Tesla is that when you're presenting, how is that one slide which can be meaningful, the most impactful, that can speak to the leadership? They don't have very much time. We have 30 minutes to discuss with them. What are some of the biggest things that you're going to take weight off from them? What are their priorities? And of those priorities, what is that top thing you can take over and provide, you know, impact in? And put it in a more visual and a succinct manner and be able to, you know, discuss. And the things that you don't know, be upfront. I don't know, but I'm willing to investigate and find further. But come up with this mindset that, hey, this is a journey. I'm proposing something and we will solve this in a given, you know, amount of time. So that's what I would say is this mindset, can-do mindset, works really well no matter where you go.
I love ask for more. Always ask for more. That is a thought that we'll carry. We have one question from the audience. Gerald is asking, do you feel that the PMP is valuable for the language development? Also, besides having a cursory knowledge of waterfall, Kanban, and so on, is there one in specific that you would suggest to have a thorough working knowledge of?
Yeah. So I would say there are two things there. I personally was not gravitated to PMP because it's yet another certification. It's good to get somebody's eye on the resume, but I think the biggest impact that anybody, and I'm not discouraging you from doing PMP, I think it has a lot of benefits. People have learned, but what I've understood the benefit of PMP is when it's actually implemented, when you take those things and you implement it into whatever projects you're doing. And it's an organized way. Either you do PMP and you use those skill set, regardless, being organized, being able to show scheduling. So to answer your question on Kanban, I will say from implementing projects, it was really important. I wouldn't say the visual of a Kanban is helpful, but how you do it, what tools you use, it's varied. Like I've used a milestone on just, you know, basic graph to show this is my project timeline. This is, you know, how I will deliver the projects. So if PMP is your route, if it's additional burden of studying and your time as well as money, and you want to think whether you need it or not, I would say it's not necessary. But if you think it is for you, please go ahead and do it. But there is other ways of doing it. And there's so many different visuals and organization methods that are there. You can benefit from, and every company, I would say, has a different culture. So at Tesla, it's like a startup culture, and whatever works fast and furious and is visual and is impactful works. So nobody cares if you have a, you know, whatever degree you came from is never addressed when you're at the company. So that's what I would say about your question.
Perfect. Yes. Great question. I would encourage more questions if you guys have. We are going to move. Actually, we just got another question, so let's answer it right now. Could you suggest one of those organization methods? Which is the fast and furious? What do you think?
Yeah, so I would say some of those that helped me a ton and which Tesla heavily uses are Confluence and Jira. And I'll tell you Jira because they are a tech company. So keeping track of initiatives, keeping track of software development, and I would say majority of my involvement has been with software because process improvement was heavily automation-based and software-based. So Jira was a great way to track it. I also was a little bit old school as well. I had my own Excel tracker, and I would say Excel was my best buddy in the last 10 years. And the way I kept it organized was by initiatives and color coding. I would say you can come up with your unique ways of organizing things. And I would do them by priority level. What needs to be addressed when? Who is available when something needs to be delivered? Even Excel is super helpful in organizing that. Having a roadmap for your project or your initiatives upfront. And you can use whatever tool. I had both Excel, PowerPoint, I had Confluence, I had Jira. You can embed Excel within Confluence. You can embed images within Jira and keep track. So it's super helpful. And then they all talk to Outlook and Teams and whatnot. So it's a super complex world. I would say keeping it out, open mindset to softwares so that as you get into a company, what is their culture needing? How do they work? What is helpful for them? And delivering, are they open to new softwares? Are they willing? So you have to tread those waters, the way, because you don't want to go uphill battle and trying to convince people to use softwares they have not used. It's also a money use. So whatever is available at the company, make most use Excel. Anyways, I love Excel, PowerPoint. Those are my favorite.
Awesome. Okay, moving into a different category. Just could you give me a bit, what were some of the things in the innovation space that you've noticed in clean tech or just across sustainability that have caught your eye and that have been exciting for you to kind of explore?
Yeah. So I'll go back to Tesla again, because that's the most experience. And then maybe we can dive deep into the other segments where innovation was happening. So off the bat at Tesla, the very first year I was at Tesla, I got the opportunity. That's when, Model 3 was scaling. And prior to that, at UC Davis, I had the opportunity to go to the Skoda manufacturing facility in Prague. And so I had some benchmark of what automation, manufacturing looked like, and a more global brand, right? Skoda is. So coming back to Tesla, I volunteered on a one-night shift on the production line for Model 3. And I was amazed how Tesla is so daunting. Like, they're not afraid to reinvent production. The biggest innovation for Tesla is not bringing the EV to market. It's scaling it. So thinking that you can, how many X, bringing 85 million cars to the market by 2025 is not an easy feat. The Fremont factory, which is really close to where I live, that one, when Toyota had that factory, they barely used it. But what Tesla did in terms of innovation is reinventing this production line, thinking how they can break it. So first, they took the step to manually do everything, understand what the steps are. How can we take this and run and scale it? So whatever it takes, can-do attitude that I was saying, that's what Tesla said. They built a tent. They build a tent always. For any new production line, they build a tent. They bring people together. They hire people. And then they understand how these pieces are. They also did a great job on robotics. So the pieces that they understood could be done by robots, don't need human interventions. They have amazing automation and robotics team that just works on this. They also have an amazing CapEx team that builds all these things. Like, they're willing to visualize, we need to build all these factories, we need to build these tents, we need all this. So they have this mindset of thinking big that they can do, and taking whatever their forte is, what they're best at, and using that to scale. The other thing I would say at Tesla, which is critical for their innovation, which other automakers didn't do, is this vertical integration. So from a business language, what vertical integration means is bringing whatever that is necessary for the manufacturing of your product, you bring all that in your abilities to do, you increase your abilities to do all of them. So for example, within Tesla, right from battery manufacturing, so they manufacture their own battery, and now they're opening up a lithium refinery soon. So that is another vertical integration that they're doing in addition to battery. The powertrain manufacturing, motor manufacturing, software and firmware, everything is done within Tesla, and something which has not been done in the auto industry has been sales of these. So Tesla is the very first person, company that said, hey, I don't want to give money to the third party to make sales. I'm going to make this experience for the customer through my own retail, through my own branding. So they have retail through which they sell. And you know, that's the whole experience for Tesla. Innovation on delivering. I got my Model 3 delivered to my doorstep. So they innovate in every single aspect. If you have a Tesla, you will know, it's different from other cars. They innovated from the door handle to, the cameras. And of course, I don't need to speak to autopilot. That's its own beast. But I would say Tesla has innovated in so many ways. From the residential energy aspect, there were a lot of storage batteries in the market. But what was important is understanding what is the need for a specific segment of market. What is needed to scale battery production so that, these things can come out. And they keep innovating on bringing, so many unique products to the market, even from the residential energy storage. They brought in the solar roof, which, a lot of people, because I studied it, a lot of people have tried to bring it, but to bring it to scale to market, how to manufacture it, vision of Elon was at some point 1,000 homes per week of solar roof. It's a daunting one, but they want to do it. So having that mindset, innovating on how to reduce, this product so that it's easy to install, all of those innovations were critical. Outside of Tesla, there's a lot of people who are innovating on materials, on reusing materials to create new building products, to create innovative recycled products from plastic, from this. The sky's the limit, and I'm super excited. There's so many people working in this space. So really exciting innovations taking place in our industry.
Yeah. And could you share just like if you had any insights on how inclusive that process was for defining the innovation innovation spaces where Tesla wanted to participate? I imagine that, it had to happen like 1, 2, 3 at a time, and then it became this piece that it is today. But what was sort of your impression on like what was the sort of question that they kept asking themselves as they were progressing towards innovation in different aspects and spheres?
Yeah, so I would say like they clearly, and that's why I always come to philosophical, but Tesla also the philosophy, their mission is accelerating the world's sustainable transition. So that's very succinct, saying this is what, and what does it take to accelerate this transition? It takes this ecosystem of renewable energy production, of storing it, because as we understand, technically, storage was missing big time from the, production space. And then electric vehicle is a no-brainer. We all know fossil fuels are impacting in so many different ways to our climate. Having an electric vehicle, which has, no emissions, and scaling that is critical. So I would say that mission was very important for them to push. And I would say that Tesla is a little bit different uniquely because of their CEO. He does not care about the market. He doesn't care. Eventually now the business cares about it. But at the onset, as an innovator, as an entrepreneur, his thing is, I want to bring the best thing to the market. I want to give a solution to what doesn't exist there. And I dream big. So I'll bring that to the market. There's a lot of people who tried and tested it and they failed because they were not at it. They gave up. They said it was too difficult. It was too cost intensive, which I feel like Tesla kept that mindset. The way they began the inclusivity process later on in their, you know, after maybe a decade, was participating with the cities on helping. Like, imagine the workforce they are contributing to this economy with the number of factories they have across the globe, not only in US, in, you know, in Texas, Fremont, and in Buffalo, and in Nevada. They have a factory in Shanghai, in Berlin, and they'll open up more, is impacting this workforce. So later on, the inclusivity came from working with the cities and the states, with the federal government on saying that, hey, we are bringing sustainable products. We are bringing, we're creating jobs, and we will add to the economy. So that's how they got, you know, people to hear them. But at the onset, I don't think that was the case. It was an expensive product. It was a smaller market. But bringing the scale and building scalable models, which are affordable, I think that's when they got people hearing to them.
Beautiful. And I know we're coming up to the end of our event, but we have a couple of more questions. So I want to be sure that I get to some of those. So somebody is asking about how did you find the stakeholders who were skeptical of implementing these initiatives and how you won over them? I think this skill is super valuable and would love to hear your experiences. You spoke a little bit about just not wavering. You spoke that you understood a lot of different business languages, but would love to hear more.
Yeah, so I would say at the onset, when you started entry-level position or at mid-level, you know, leadership is just focused on the top line. They're focused on how to make quick shifts and they're looking at the big picture. So when you first get their attention or, you know, the people who report to them, A is setting up this time, I would say, is a 30-minute that you set up with them. Say, hey, this is, you know, I understand, you know, and even one step before, asking them what is their day-to-day, what are their challenges? So you're coming from a position of empathy to them and asking them, hey, you know, I don't have visibility, but what are some of the challenges that you have? And saying that, you know, this is what I am doing right now. I feel like I can contribute more. Just leave at that. And I did that. I'm saying that, you know, they don't have much time. Unless they are in the mentorship mindset, they don't have time. So when you make an impression that you're willing to hear, you're willing to showcase what you did in terms of impact from your work, leave at that. Again, ask for time and be flexible with them on, you know, what are some of the things that you think they can delegate to you that you could take on and be able to be just more empathetic in understanding and speak up when you have events at, you know, when you have all hands, when you have all these events, make sure you speak up, you write an email, you make yourself seen so that people remember you when you do something, give shout outs to your team and include the leadership saying, hey, you know, I'm really proud of the efforts my colleague XYZ has done. That way you show your leadership skills and grab your attention on, you know, how you are inclusive and you're willing to work in this team environment. So I feel like make it not about yourself in this whole journey. Make it about them. Make it about the company. Make it about your peers.
Beautiful. I love that answer. I would like to just, as we're coming up to the end of our hour, I would just love to hear more about your final pivot. So towards youth development, and would love to hear just about your mission, what inspired your transition, and yeah, what is your vision for the future?
Yeah, so I have a new baby in my hand. So while at Tesla, I thought hard. I didn't, you know, quit Tesla immediately. I thought hard what I want to do next in the social impact and environmental sustainability space. One common thread that has been throughout, you know, my career has been mentorship. So I graduated out of USC But, you know, students from Marshall School reach out to me, my UC Davis business school students reach out, EDF Climate Corps fellows reach out. So I have never stopped mentoring these people because I know how important it is to get, listen to them and guide them. So I felt like there is, you know, there's a ton of successful people coming out of these four-year degrees, out of master's degrees, in talking with community college students. I feel like there is a huge gap in them understanding what are some of the, you know, jobs out there in environmental sustainability. They're well-being jobs. So my next stint is I am working on a workforce development, green workforce development nonprofit that will work with community college students. In, you know, giving them that entry point to their first job. So the way it will look like is this spring semester, I'm partnering with a local community college here on like a cohort of 10 students that we will do in the spring semester. We will learn industry concepts, we'll meet industry experts, and then we'll learn some soft and hard skills, like I talked about, you know, resume building, LinkedIn, how to pitch an idea, all those, you know, things that are necessary to enter workforce, understand what are some of the projects people do in other companies like case study. And then finally, the goal of my nonprofit would be to land them an internship, like an 8-week internship, which is specifically a solution space so that they learn, you know, on the job, what is that company does, what, how to provide a solution. And then the goal is to have them learn what some of these, you know, companies are doing, what are some of the jobs available for them. Getting them to learn, you know, concepts of ESG, and those are great, but learning those hard skills, which I was telling you about, learning Excel, analytics, learning, you know, what the company's products are, how to make that small difference. That's my goal. And then making them confident so that they can enter in the workforce. So super excited about my, it's also, you know, pivotal entrepreneurial point for me because it is pushing my envelope. I wrote the business plan. I invited the board of directors to join me. So it's exciting for me as well in my career journey is thinking through all the aspects of the company, how it's going to be right from their mission statement to the program development, to networking with the stakeholders, networking with funders. So it's helping me grow as an individual. And I feel like that's going to help me, you know, be invested in this for the next 20 years of my career so that I can grow this and, you know, make the actual grassroots difference in increasing this workforce. So super excited about my new endeavor.
Amazing. I can definitely see how parts of your career that you covered with us today play into this move and decision. And I'm very, very excited for you to kind of update us on the progress and everything that you do in the upcoming time. Overall, we're really thankful that you got to join us today. Thank you for sharing all of those amazing insights and allowing us to ask all of the questions. And I think that, from all of us, thank you. And we will be following up with resources from Nagashri. Thanks everybody for joining.
Yeah. And thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to speak to you all. Mentorship is a big part. So I want to give back to this community through that. If my experience in any ways helps you navigate, I encourage you to reach out to me and you know, set up time. I'm happy to discuss with you. I also thank Voice tremendously in talking with you all, and your leadership has been super helpful in, you know, navigating my new endeavor as well. And I listen to your podcast all the time. You guys are doing, Voice is doing an amazing work in this field. So this, you know, collaborative work and, you know, what learning from each other is super meaningful for me. And I wish Voice a lot of luck in scaling your community So super excited to partner with you guys.
And that's it from us. Thanks so much for listening. Remember to follow on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. You can learn more about Voice Academy and our upcoming courses on upskilling into the climate space at voice.academy. That's VOIZ.academy. And if you want to support the podcast, share it with someone else who's passionate about this space.